Hi and welcome everybody to the ARC 360 podcast, brought to you in association with corporate partners BASF, BMS, CAPS, Copart, Emacs, Integral, Enterprise Rent-A-Car, Merca, Nationwide Vehicle Recovery Assistance, S&G Response, and Solera Auditex, as well as our partners Gemini, Repairify, and Prasco UK, and associate partners Thatcham Research and Trend Tracker. Please do check out all of these businesses for any of your automotive claims, repair, or supply chain needs. In this episode, we visit Repairify in Luton to sit down with Managing Director Martin Brown to discuss the role its tools and diagnostic support has across the sector. We talk usage cases, challenges and opportunities, keeping pace with technology, and a consistent theme, education and training. Martin also reveals his inner shredder snowboard talents and how he's already driving his dream machine. Enjoy the podcast. Right, wonderful. Thank you very much for joining us today, Martin. Really appreciate your time, my friend. And how is the world treating you at the moment?
Yes, very good, thank you.
Fantastic. Great to be down here in Luton once again. So is this kind of headquarters now?
It is, yes. It's Repairify's headquarters. We've been here just over a year now in our lovely new shiny building, which is, yeah, quite a big difference to our old one.
It's great. And that I actually kind of had a little look on the map yesterday again, but surrounded by some high-profile names within the repair world as well. So interesting.
Yep, we have a Gemini shop just recently opened at the end of the road, and we have a Steel Automotive, all within a stone's throw away from us.
Great. So, yeah, when I leave here today, I may well just have a little scoot around and see what's going on. I always like to keep check on the sector. I'm that geeky, many would say. Thanks very much for your time. And again, we'll kind of, you know, it's great to get more of an insight into Repairify, get a bit of an update in terms of what's happening in your world, and also get, you know, obviously your take and opinion on the sector, what you see happening out there in the real world. So, I mean, what is the latest from Repairify then, you know, specifically here in the UK?
Obviously, yeah, latest from Repairify, obviously, we've got a couple of new tools we're releasing. We have what we're going to be calling our all-in-one diagnostics tool, which encompasses local diagnostics where you can scan your vehicle locally and it has our remote technology built in. So what we're able to do if we find you have something which you need your handheld with, or it requires the OE equipment, we're able to then take over with our remote technicians and supply that all in one tool. So it's no longer two separate devices.
And do you, you know, in terms of that kind of split, I suppose, in terms of that workload, that either done locally and or then tapped into you, is there sort of a, you know, a definitive split that you might see out in the market, or is everyone using it kind of differently depending on what work they've got going through the shop?
Yeah, that really depends upon, you know, on the shop and the sector and the type of vehicles they're working on, even down to manufacturer level. Obviously, we're seeing different manufacturers put different security systems, secure gateways, different parts that need programming to their vehicles, and that can have a huge effect on how the actual repair process is done. The answer to your question is yes, we are seeing it from some repairers, primarily repairers that are working on more model European vehicles.
And behind that, again, internally with Repairify, in terms of your technicians supporting these kind of systems, what's the current sort of status in terms of, you know, what provision have you got behind the scenes? How many technicians are sat there doing the desktop side of things?
We have circa 20, just over 20 technicians working our office in Peterlee. And in our technical centre here in Luton, we have roughly 10 members of staff offering support, whether it be from OE equipment, supplying the tools, supplying the ADAS equipment, ADAS technical support. It could be just ring up. Some people will say, how's the weather today? Just ring up for a friendly chat. But generally, they're obviously vehicle technical related questions.
I'm sure have a little look around the workshop once again, which would be great. Great to see what's going on out there and what kind of, you know, challenges you're up against in the real world. So always good from my perspective to see a little bit of the real world. Tell us a little bit then about kind of the technical aspects of what Repairify offers and how you are currently kind of supporting industry stakeholders, and I suppose, you know, crucially amongst all of this, and the most important person in all of this is vehicle owners.
What we did at Repairify, obviously all of our technicians are qualified technicians. So what you tend to find in the collision industry is that most of the staff are either MET or they're paint or they're, or even or valeting or clerical staff. We haven't really got experienced technicians, electrical technicians in many shops. Of course, some shops do, and they, you know, they take a stance on we need to send particular members of staff for training purely for ADAS. All they do is ADAS, or all they do is electrical items. But not every shop, unfortunately, can afford to have dedicated members of staff just for this. So this is where Repairify comes in. We're there when a shop has a problem to hold their hand, guide them through the process using 99% OE manufacturers' diagnostics equipment, where we can log into the car remotely, scan the car, look at the fault codes, analyse the fault codes or problems that they're experiencing, and try and hold their hand through the repair to make sure the car's, you know, put back to pre-collision state.
And you talked about some shops having specific or dedicated individuals in this area now. And again, it's, you know, something that's probably been talked about in terms of the changing roles within the industry. Are you seeing more of that? Is that something that's becoming more prevalent? Perhaps, I don't know, is it more within larger groups than anything else?
It's within larger groups we're seeing it. And we are seeing it with, you know, all, I'd say most of the larger groups now, which is not, there's not loads and loads of them in the UK, but of the large groups in the UK, we are starting to see them have a dedicated technician who will travel from site to site to site, just purely work on the more complex electronic or programming events and offering that service for there. Particular organisation.
Really interesting. So the evolution of job role within the industry,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And a very exciting one at that. And aside from repairers, obviously there's an element, you know, alongside that and very much involved in that is the insurers. You know, what does Repairify give to insurers?
Okay, what it's giving to insurers, I suppose, is the reassurance that if Repairify has been involved in that repair and we've offered a remote calibration or scan of that vehicle, you know, as I just said, 99% of the time we are doing it with trained technicians using the OE diagnostics tools. So you might have, you know, not me saying that any tools other than the OE don't perform as good a job, but what you do get with the OE equipment is, let's say a particular manufacturer might put an online update out overnight in the last 30 seconds. That will be fed to the OE tools, and it takes the aftermarket tools some time to catch up. That might be a case of a week, a year, a day. But, you know, using the OE equipment, you are guaranteed to the best you can be that the scan is performed and the results are the most up to date.
Good to
hear.
So I
think that, it sort of gives the manufacturer a little bit of peace of mind that, you know, the results that we've got back are the best best you can get.
I suppose it's, it's a bit of an odd one, this, because I'm sure there is no such thing as a typical usage case. But if we were to say, right, where does Repairify enter the process and kind of leave the process within a repair? How does that happen, and kind of what would that process be, the involvement there that you might have?
The typical usage case might be the diagnostics technician in the workshop would go to scan a car, let's say do a pre-scan, and they find that the car might have, for example, a secure gateway. As different manufacturers are adding different layers of security to their cars, not all aftermarket tools have access. So he wouldn't be able to get any communications or very little communications with maybe one or two modules on that car.
Sorry, Martin, would this be a pre-scan estimate side before estimate?
Yeah, you generally find that most shops now will do a pre-scan at the start of the repair. An example for that might be no communication with, a Mercedes, for example, no communication for headlight. There's just a slight crack in that headlight, but there's a module on the headlight, sits underneath it. So any condensation will go in that headlight, drip down into the module and damage the module. So you'd want to pick up that part at pre-scan. There are other manufacturers where the headrest might only jump forward just a small amount in the collision to protect your neck, but you might get all the way, which are trimmed in obviously the same colour leather as the seats. That could have a 3-week waiting, you know, back order on it, 4 weeks. So you get right to the end of the repair, then find out you've got another 3-week backlog. So that's where the actual pre-scan is really important in making sure that electronically you pick up the parts that are required for the repair, as well as the physical damage that you can see to structural or body panels.
So allowing you to preempt ordering of parts, or at least starting to source, I suppose, at that side of it, i.e. pre-estimate.
And sorry, yeah, then the process from there, if you like. Talk us through that side.
Yeah, so the process from there, obviously, an incoming call would come to our technical centre. Not generally, that would be answered within 30 seconds. One of our technicians would obviously pick up that call, chat with the engineer, ask them about the repair, what's been done, what's the status of the vehicle, ask them to connect the Repairify device to the vehicle. We would then make that connection. We'll then give us the ability to scan the vehicle. If it was a pre-repair, for example, we'd scan the vehicle, we would then run through the trouble codes and we would send the technician a report and recommendations based upon the codes of what would require replacing or programming on that particular pre-scan. If it was a post-scan repair, they're calling up after repair, we would then run through the vehicle again, look at the codes, clear the codes down, make sure that we can give the vehicle a clean bill of health and then send that report, which had been done with the manufacturer's equipment, to the shop to actually submit with the job pack and make sure that everything's in the document pack and ready for the owner to collect the vehicle.
And all this done, I assume, kind of paperless?
Exactly, yeah, everything's paperless.
Very, very interesting stuff. So there's lots going on in the market at the moment, as we well know. Lots of challenges, lots of market dynamics, things moving parts, if you like. How is it impacting on the repair of my perspective of things? And has anything kind of changed noticeably in terms of how the system is deployed or utilised?
Again, I'll come back a little bit about secure gateways. Secure gateways is where we're seeing an increase of an awful lot of sort of pre and post scans now. Secure gateways are where manufacturers are putting an extra layer of security in the vehicles. What this would stop is, for example, if you were driving your car down the motorway and somebody beside you might want to come in and hack your vehicle, turn your brakes off, move your steering. So the manufacturers have, as I said, have this extra layer of security that also protects parts being stolen from vehicles. So at the moment, not all manufacturers are offered access to the secure gateways in the aftermarket, meaning that it's only OE tools that can work on certain brands at the moment. And that's really been a trend that started in 2019 with just one group. And now in 2020, by the end of 2025, I envisage that over 50% of vehicle manufacturers will have some form of secure gateway, meaning you'd have to be licensed and have to pay for the aftermarket tool to be able to perform the tasks. Where I see the massive change here, the technician will need to be identified before using diagnostics equipment, because that's where we've seen manufacturers doing it in the aftermarket. Haven't quite got there yet, but they're moving towards that.
Yep.
So we can actually put a technician to a task on the day, on the time, to hold his hands up, yes, that was me that done that task, and I'm happy with the results.
It's incredible stuff, isn't it? Sat here, I assume that this kind of thing is only going to become more prevalent with active safety systems, you know, a long-term view of self-driving. These vehicles have got to be locked down in one way, shape, or form.
Of course. People, you know, say to me, you know, are they just trying to lock us out, the manufacturers? Are they just trying to stop me from doing my job? No, they're not. Look, would you put your wife and kids in the car that any technician could have worked on that car with no training and no recourse or no way of identifying, if they had training, who they were? Well, the answer, I think, for 99% of people would, no, I'd want to ensure if my vehicle's got level 1, 2, 3, whatever autonomy names they're going to call them in the future, that the technician that has done that knew what they were doing. For me, the importance of doing it correct even now is not so much self-driving of the vehicle, it's the vehicle performing an emergency stop when it shouldn't, not you hitting somebody. At the moment, if you hit somebody because your ADAS wasn't perhaps calibrated correctly, still really your fault, because it is not fully autonomous.
Yes,
you haven't got full autonomy at the moment.
Yep.
So you are supposed to be in charge of the vehicle. It assists you if you're driving. But if your radar was calibrated too low, for example, or too far to the left or the right, a scenario I could give is you're going down a motorway in the fast lane. There's nothing in the middle lane at that point. A motorcycle close behind you, a car moves from the left-hand lane to the middle lane, your radar is pointing to the left because a bracket was bent in a collision. There'll be no warning lights on, but it wasn't calibrated. Your car will perhaps perhaps an emergency stop in the fast lane because it thinks you're approaching the car to the middle lane too fast. Motorcyclists would hit the rear of your vehicle. And you'd say, I didn't touch the brakes.
Yeah.
But my car's just come out of a repair. That's where I personally see the concerns, even now, the level of autonomy we have on 90% of 2018 onwards vehicles.
And do you know what? I had a really kind of interesting take on this the other day. I enjoy my running, as many people listening to this will know. But I was running down on a road, face on towards traffic, as you are advised to. You know, cars kind of whizzing by. And I had that moment where I thought that very same thing, which is quite odd because I'm meant to be escaping, you know, the realities of life at that point. But yeah, that moment where you think, if somebody's vehicle sensor picks me up as an object in their line of sight, what that could kind of create thereafter. And it was just one of those moments where you think, blimey, yeah, how important it is to make sure these things are done correctly.
It goes much deeper than that. I mean, it's got to get to the point where the vehicle chooses who to run over, the mother or the child. The child's smaller, so it's less damage to the occupants of the vehicle. But where the owner, like me or you, might head towards the wall because we'll know, yeah, the vehicle's going to be wrecked, but we're still going to be fine. We avoid the mother and the child.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
At some point in the future, the car manufacturers have got to make that AI decision.
There you go. On that thought, let's move on quickly because that's a huge can of worms and we can go on forever about that one. In terms of kind of themes within the market at the moment, and again, probably touching back on this kind of market dynamics, recurring themes, challenges, missed opportunities in the market. You know, again, one of the key topics out there is we hear a lot about people and skills and training. We hear a lot about kind of challenges with certain parts in the market and what that's kind of doing to the infrastructure at the moment. Work volumes, all this kind of stuff is going on. But is there anything sort of specific to you as Repairify that, you either see and or, you can support in one way, shape or form?
Yeah, firstly, skills shortage. We're still seeing a lack of younger people in the industry. I think they still consider it, dirty work working on cars.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's not so much anymore. You tend to see some of the most collision centres now are absolutely immaculate inside. You know, the gloves are great. They can actually wear them and use them. And it is not a dirty trade. It's a great trade for a young person to get into. And we're just not seeing the enthusiasm for the younger generation wanting to come into the automotive sector. So we are seeing an ageing population of technicians, which is really concerning for me, to be honest. Also part shortage. I was abroad working with Repairify earlier in the year, and we had one collision centre that had 50% of their space was taken up with vehicles now waiting for parts.
50%
of their available storage space was jobs they couldn't continue with.
Goodness me.
Which is really hurting the shops, you know, but not just on them not able to finish the work, but, so a lot of these shops, they're having to pay for the parts up front. They've got parts they've already paid for. They've got, it's put an awful lot of pressure on their cash flow, having all these cars sitting in the actual car parks and not being able to complete them. And, it's just not getting the cars back to the customers, so we've got cars on hire.
Yeah.
And all it's going to do is push everyone's insurance premiums up. So yeah, it is a bit concerning at the moment. We have seen that improve in the last month or so, but it's still not where it was pre-COVID.
And is there, again, it's not solely your mission to do this in any way, shape or form, but are there things that you as Repairify can kind of help alleviate in any way, shape or form?
Yes, I suppose what we are able to, based upon the pre-scan, we'll be able to give you an accurate, those OE equipment, an accurate, guide on, does that part actually need replacing? Or sometimes you might just be saying, well, I'm going to order that just in case. So that perhaps that can help a little bit. I know, estimating is not an exact science, but, sometimes electronically you can inspect an item rather than just physically, and you might choose to put it down for replacement because you can't electronically guarantee it will work or won't work. Where Repairify, you might give us book a session with us and say, could you give me an electronic health check on a particular item, whether it be a headlight, a radar, something like that?
Okay, yeah.
And we could check it. Obviously, any radars with damage should be replaced. But a pair of headlights on an Audi A4 for LED headlights, sort of thousands of pounds now. They're not a couple of hundred pounds. So that could be a difference between a total loss or a repair.
That's a very interesting point. I'd not sort of considered that individual testing element of products before. So it's a very interesting take on things. And in terms of bouncing back a little bit, in terms of that kind of new generation entering the industry, now whether that be, you know, youngsters coming through and or people from other sectors, I look at things like Repairify and what we've just mentioned in terms of some of the groups having designated individuals in these positions. To me, that's really interesting stuff in terms of the evolution of our sector and these new roles that are kind of, you know, coming about as vehicles evolve, as businesses evolve, and as products and support mechanisms also do too. So it's kind of an interesting take and mix we've got going on there.
For example, we have in our technical support centre here, in our engineering centre, we have one guy, Lewis, young lad, he's 23 now. He hadn't taken a wheel off in years. He's purely only sits in vehicles with laptops.
Right.
So we have a full-time member of staff that does nothing other than sit in vehicles with laptops. And I could have three Lewises if they're available. There is known, you know, certainly there is a requirement in pretty much, I believe, moving forward, most centres to have somebody who that would ordinarily be a younger person that wants to just understand computers, understand how the OE manufacturer's equipment works. You might find that you've got a shop that, talking ourselves out of work here, that there's a lot of work on BMW that we, you know, could even talk in the system in acquiring and working with their own BMW OE tool, just that one brand. Admittedly, repair centres couldn't afford to have every OE tool for every manufacturer because you'd be talking circa £500,000 per centre in equipment, which they're not going to do. But let's say they did five BMWs a week, then we could perhaps assist or talk them through purchasing their own BMW piece of equipment, hold their hand and work through that process with them.
And that's very interesting. And from your perspective, we're going off piste a little bit here, but technology first or automotive interest first, or just kind of attitude in terms of person?
And types of person, it would have to be tech. They'd have to be really interested in tech. So it'd be technology first, because it really is, they would be a computer technician more than a mechanic. You know, this is really what it's hard to, you know, to put advertise for somebody like that, because you're saying, yeah, what I actually want is a computer technician. You say, if you put, you know, we're an automotive collision centre, they're not going to be looking in that spot.
No, exactly.
But so that, you know, that's what you'd need. And then obviously, interest in cars, it would come second.
Keeping pace, both individuals and systems, if you like. But, you know, a point often raised is how do systems keep up with the latest VM data? You've kind of alluded to it a couple of times already. You know, is it a valid concern within the industry?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, we're starting to see online updates on vehicles now. What we will see in the future is viral updating, which is really interesting, which is, say your car has the very latest software patch in a particular module. You park in a Sainsbury's car park, and then the car beside you is of the same brand, that we will take that information from your vehicle and update their vehicle systems. That is a future. That is where we're going. At the moment, as I said, we're seeing more online. It's more sort of navigation and maps and things. You'll get in your more modern car now and you'll say there's been an update today. But that's more, as I said, more navigations and maps and softer items rather than... Yeah. Recently, there's a famous electric car manufacturer that overnight on all their vehicles dropped the ride heights. I mean, again, everyone's talking about BMW and they're charging for their heated seats, which... You know, my take on it, I think that's great, because if you buy the vehicle with heated seats, well, then you've got them forever, as far as I'm aware. If you don't, you've got the option to purchase them at any time in the future. Things like that, I think, are positive. Where it could be challenging for the industry is if you were to... They're talking about pay-as-you-go ADAS componentry on cars, meaning if you want to go on a road trip to the south of France in your Porsche, whatever, you can pay for lane assist, let's say, just for that, you know, month period, and then it will come off thereafter. So if it was to go out of calibration during the time when it was inactive and you activate it, you wouldn't ordinarily know.
Gosh.
So there's things like that I think we just need to think about as well.
Really interesting, really interesting. Not only really interesting technology and advancements, but also the kind of knock-on challenges, potential implications.
Where I think we will see is the ADAS functionality becoming part. I think it is going part of the MOT.
Right.
So there will be, albeit there's just a warning light on, well, that's not, doesn't necessarily tell you it works properly. People assume just because there's no warning lights on the car that all the calibrations are successful and they're going to work as they should. Well, that's certainly not true. A lot of ADAS is very mechanical. If you think it's a radar which points towards objects and then makes its calculation decisions based upon the object. Well, if that is just physically, mechanically pointing in the wrong direction, it's not necessarily looking in the right place.
How do you work with repairers, insurers, outsource partners to ensure vehicles are diagnosed and calibrated correctly? Now, that may sound like a real kind of obvious question, but is it ongoing education? Have you got a sort of lot of people on the ground out there in body shops every day? But again, it's we must be very aware that we're not just talking about body shops here. We're talking about the wider industry as a whole.
Obviously, vehicle technology is changing and changing quickly at the moment. So, whenever we do an ADAS installation, obviously, we will offer ADAS training for the vehicles they have on site and ongoing training if a manufacturer or VM would like us to. The technology is constantly evolving, constantly changing. We've got the AOM 230 certification, which I believe has just changed in the last few weeks. Forgive me, off the top of my head, I can't remember the new acronym the new ADAS certificate. I know my badge come through yesterday, and it's not AOM anymore. It's something else. I forgot it already.
We'll figure it out. We'll fill in the gaps.
So we are seeing certification, but moving further forward, I think we're doing a really good job in the collision world. Now let's look at the mechanical world or the SMR, the aftermarket. Yeah. I would imagine the certification of technicians that are working on ADAS in that is, I'm going to hazard a guess, I wouldn't like to, it's less than 5%.
Wow.
So that is where I can see us, a challenge, should we say, in the independent aftermarket, fully understanding autonomy and ADAS and having their technicians certified to do the work. I think we're doing an amazing job in the collision world, to be honest, when you look at how we've embraced ADAS technology and getting it certified correctly and getting our technicians trained.
And in terms of how are you working with insurers, I suppose, as well? Huge awareness piece throughout the industry, as I said, but is there anything specific that you're doing there?
No, we obviously, insurers talk to us and ask us, questions. It might be, Martin, this ADAS calibration on this car's come out a huge amount. Why? Then it might, it's us educating insurers sometimes, saying, well, did you know that car has, three cameras, five radars, an hour and a half road test, and is going to take this amount of time? It's like, even from the insurers, like, wow, really? Okay. We didn't understand, we didn't realise the amount of work that is involved in that particular to calibration and putting that back to pre-collision state. What I think insurers perhaps going to need to do in the future is to perhaps look at insuring cars not just upon the value, but on the build specification maybe.
Right, yeah.
Or what was actually fitted to that car? Mm. So BMW 5 Series, it could range from perhaps 40 to 80 grand. And you could perhaps spec it with 30 grand's worth of equipment. I think this perhaps needs to be something looked at there from the sector to look at, albeit that perhaps that car should stop quicker because it's got more autonomy. But it's a funny, I actually spoke to an insurer not so long ago and said, are you seeing less impact damage as an average from electric cars?
Okay, yep.
Rather than normal combustion vehicles. And they said, because I was imagining people that buy electric cars are probably, want to be saved, better to the planet and safer drivers. And they said, no, the opposite.
Oh, really? Again, quite interesting, yes. Yeah,
they said they're so quick off the line, they're seeing so much front damage where they're hitting cars. Other cars from behind. And that really surprised me.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting one, isn't it? Because, again, the theory behind driving electric vehicles, you drive them completely differently, i.e., you kind of regenerate the braking to get the charge back in. So you would think you're kind of slower to junctions, i.e., maybe eliminating that front to rear end type collision. Yeah, you can understand off the marks kind of thing as well, why that would happen there. So.
Yeah. That was quite surprising for me to hear that.
Well, hey, it just goes to show how much I think as an industry there is continuous learning to take place. We're all in this kind of realm of everything's changing around us, and it's almost, you know, nobody can be, you know, the expert of everything. I think we've all got to pool our resources and skills and, you know, help each other along on the way, which I think is tremendous. Again, that leads us beautifully into this question. You, as Repairify, are probably seeing some insightful trends in terms of diagnostics and calibrations. Are there certain things you are seeing, specific faults, specific brands, models, giving rise to certain needs to carry out tasks? You know, what's kind of headline stuff, really?
Yeah, the headline stuff, nothing has really changed dramatically over the last, you know, sort of 2 or 3 years in the faults we're seeing. It, as I alluded to earlier, it's more secure gateways where we're seeing the new manufacturers tightening down on the security systems in the vehicles. Should be electrification. We're seeing issues, well, I wouldn't say an issue, but we're seeing where, based upon an impact, perhaps a pyrofuse going off on the battery pack itself.
Right, yeah.
Meaning the battery pack has to be dropped down with a relatively light repair, and then a pyrofuse changed actually on the hybrid or fully electric battery. So, you know, we've got one down in our workshop now, which if you take a look at, where just it's a relatively light impact at the rear, but it's involved, you know, Repairify here. We have £14,000 worth of equipment. The car's got air around it. It's all roped off. You know, padlocks over everything. It's decommissioned. But it's, you know, for electric vehicles is a different way of repairing vehicles, which, you know, I think we are seeing repairers embrace, but it's something which, you know, we can't stop them. They're coming.
Yeah.
We do need to. Yeah, certain repairers are going to need to think about how they work with electric vehicles and the repair process, because it is different to what we've seen over the last couple of 100 years. Well.
And so, evolution of the market, arguably. Everybody's role is doing the same thing in one way, shape or form. How do you see Repairify sort of evolving in the coming months, years? You know, will it be just kind of the normal, is what you're doing now? Or are there other areas that may well benefit from, and I think you've already touched upon one in terms of that kind of, you know, product potential product testing element.
But. Yeah, no, I think it's pretty much a normal. It's been, you know, we're carrying on as we are. What I think we would like to do is to have our training academy. So we'd look to run training courses here based, you know, talking about new technologies, the new ADAS calibration systems as they're being evolved. And that's the way you know, in the United States, we've just opened our Centre of Excellence,
yep,
which is what we're working over there. And we're going to roll that model out over in the US, then look to bring that over to our European counterparts.
That is exciting stuff. AI and increased automation impact on claims. So what do you think AI and increased automation, what do you think the impact will be on claims?
What we're aiming for is to try and automate the claims process and maybe look at, perhaps we need to be careful here, look at truly assessing PI claims based upon the sensors in the vehicle. I mean, you've got something called CDR, collision data retrieval, where you can actually look at up to 30 seconds before and after an actual collision, look at G-forces, look at speeds, look at accelerators, brake forces. I don't think, though this is perhaps loosely connected to AI, I don't think an industry will be using that enough at that type of data at the moment. I know certain insurers are using it in a trial basis. In the police world, it's pretty standard now. Yeah, okay. If there's a fatality, unfortunately, which is absolutely dreadful, but they will be using that data to try and reconstruct the collision. But we're not using that in the as part of the claims process. So that's the way I think we will see it start to go forward, over, because that data couldn't be transferred at point of impact to perhaps a third party to be able to reconstruct a claim and maybe write the vehicle off at the roadside rather than it go to a collision centre to be estimated and then, you know, then into co-parts and so forth. It could say a 10-year-old car with a 5G impact to the offside front. There's no way that car's ever going back on the road, but I exaggerated there. Let's say a 3-year-old car with a 4G impact in the rear means it's total loss.
And that's interesting. And I assume that data would be, should be overlaid with all the various other factors that come into play, and in terms of, you know, a place for, in terms of your technology, and you know, yeah, plug it in and let it, yeah, kind of torture.
It is. I think the biggest problem we've got is still who owns that data.
Yeah.
Is it the owner of the vehicle? Is it the manufacturer that's written the data? Is it the insurer that, based upon a claim, takes ownership of that data? So I think we've still got a little way to go. The vehicles are certainly capable, like the very latest vehicles, of storing and sending that data. But I think we've just got the sticky point of who owns that data and how it's used within the claim.
An ongoing debate, that is for certain. And this leads us nicely into, so the motor claims journey in 5 years, 10 years' time, you know, what does that picture look like to you?
To me, this is just my personal opinion. I think 5-10 years' time, you will see, because of the level of autonomy that vehicles are going to possibly have, is the actual vehicle manufacturers will have a bigger part in that. I think based upon how you drive will be monitored as more of a, or not so much how you drive. If you think about it, you're actually showing the vehicle and not the driver.
Okay. Yep.
So how the vehicle is being driven by whatever driver and the average risk of that based upon the technology that's been spec'd for that vehicle is where I see the claims process changing, the insurance industry changing.
And that insurance, by sort of definition, could ultimately change in terms of premium overnight, i.e. I update my vehicle to give me X amount,
yep,
more Newton meters of torque, as it probably is now. Insurance premium, therefore, increases. Am I paying for that daily, weekly, whatever it is? And then I add another safety system, insurance premium, then could, yep, adjust accordingly.
Exactly. So you could spec your car based on the insurance premium. I don't know. I
mean, it's true. Yeah.
For me, it was a little bit. You know, my sons and my daughters—they're just getting to the age where they're driving.
Right.
And,
yep.
You know, it's quite. For me, it was like I had to go backwards because obviously insurance is incredibly expensive for people when they first start driving. So you almost find yourself looking. You don't buy a car, then look at the cost of insurance. You look at the price of insurance, then try and find the car. So I almost wanted a website, an engineering website, to do the opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll put my budget for insurance, tell me what cars fit within that.
That's interesting, isn't it?
But there's nothing out there. You end up spending hours trying this registration, trying that. Obviously, there's the obvious ones, like the Polo and, you know, a 4KA and stuff. But there's some really interesting ones that you wouldn't think would be cheap if you carry on looking through, but it's a case of spending hours on a website doing so.
So reverse engineering the whole process, maybe there's something in that. Yeah.
But then you probably find those cars, they've got these a lower insurance rate, will suddenly jump up because young people are driving them.
Interesting anyway, challenges.
I know it took me absolutely hours just running through these websites, finding, because, you know, cars that I did manage to find a couple of vehicles which were the same price as not the ordinary, but they were still very cheap insurance.
Great stuff. If you like, we've come to the end of the formal interview, and I use the word formal very loosely, but it's great to have a catch up. So quick fire question rounds, and these are the parts that always stump everyone, so you're forgiven if you do stumble here, but let's go for it anyway. So what one thing might not many people know about you?
Oh, I love snowboarding, so I might be in my 50s, but still jump on a board and go hurtling down a mountain trying to catch my daughter.
Good man, that's what we like. Have you been away this year yet? Or?
I haven't been away this year. This year is one of the first years I've missed for some time, but I still will try and find some time the next month or so to go.
That is what we like, and find some snow as well by the sounds of it.
That's right, that's why I was cancelled actually this year. The snow was dreadful, so the last minute I didn't fancy rock climbing.
No, okay, fair enough, right, that's all good. What would your alter ego be doing as a career right now?
I don't know, to be honest answer, I think you've got me on that one. I love automotive, been there pretty much all my life. We'll come back to that one. I don't know how to ask that one.
And what is your kind of career history within the sector then?
Yeah, career history. I was a auto electrician. I started up my own business in 96. Then also I had a group of staff going out to vehicle manufacturers. When vehicle manufacturers got stuck, we were going to their dealer networks and we were fixing cars for the dealer network. Found a diagnostics brand of tools. And then we created that. We rebranded our own diagnostics tools, went over to the US, founder of Parify, become their UK distributor. And then that was Red. Then Red got acquired by Parify.
Look at that. Nice story, that. We like that.
It puts very much condensed.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. It's taken a little bit longer than that.
Yeah, of course.
Best bit of business advice you've ever heard, seen or received?
You never know everything. There's always somebody that knows more than you. And it's every day is a school day in this industry.
Absolutely. Yeah, could not agree more. And I have to say, that's why I'm very privileged to sit here with people like yourself and fire away some rather silly questions and get some rather intelligent responses. It's great for me and hopefully for those listening in as well. So what do you currently drive, and what would kind of you like to drive? What would be your dream car, I suppose we're getting at?
I've got an Audi Allroad, actually. So it's bit best of everything. So you've got, it's not big SUV, but you've got your four-wheel drive. You can take it off-road and it looks, yeah.
We'll make sure Audi have listened to that, by the way. So
I think it looks quite masculine. That's quite good.
A nice car, yeah.
I quite like the Audi Allroad. What my dream car be? Oh, that depends upon where you are, what you're doing. Like, if you're up top of a mountain, my snowboard, then you need an Audi Allroad.
There you go. Perfect.
If you're on the beach in Saint-Tropez, you probably need, I don't know, a Maserati or a 911 or something.
Why on earth not? And I do think, yeah, you're absolutely right. Is there a right or wrong answer to that question? No. Do we have to be politically correct in answering it? Not for these purposes. So,
I think when you've been in the motor industry all those years and you've driven so many cars, the novelty perhaps rubs off a little bit.
Yes, well, let's not talk about the vehicle I drive, but it gets me from A to B, and it's used and abused, which I don't know if I'm ever a good advocate for the industry when people say that, but there we go. Thank you so much for your time today, Martin. Do appreciate it. It's been great to have the chat with you and catch up and find out obviously more about Repairify and where you guys are going. So thank you very much indeed.
Okay, thank you.
So a huge thank you to Martin for taking the time to talk to us. It's great to visit Repairify once again and get another look behind the scenes at its site in Luton. Plenty always going on and a great team on hand to answer my desire to understand and continuously ask questions. You've been listening to the ARC 360 podcast, brought to you in association with BASF, BMS, CAPS, Copart, Emacs, Integral, Enterprise Rent-A-Car, Merca, Nationwide Vehicle Recovery Assistance, S&G Response, and Solera Auditex, as well as partners Gemini Accident Repair Centres, Repairify, and Prasco UK, as well as associate partners Thatcham Research and Trend Tracker. Many thanks for listening. Catch up with you all soon.